pick yourself up and get over it soon. 'Cause life's this way, and dreams fade too. Nothing's gonna change until you change you. Waste time, waste energy. You'll find someone to blame, and you can complain if it makes you feel better. But I don't think it does, 'cause you keep changing like the weather.
You are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station on 102.7 FM. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
You're listening to Co-op Radio Station 102.7 FM. My name is Andrew Resmer, and the show is called Conscious Living Radio. And today, our co-host with me in the studio is
Judith Bradley.
And we're listening to Robin, who is singing about attitude, and the person who we're going to be interviewing is an example of an amazingly positive attitude. Can you please introduce?
You can. Many people will already know, local Vancouverites will know the name of Brock Tully. He's an inspiration speaker and author of a series of reflection books, and over 140,000 of these have been sold already. In 2000, Brock sold his business and cycled 18,000 kilometers around North America to raise awareness for kindness. He has definitely earned his role as the main cyclist and spokesperson for the Cycling for Kindness project. So, Brock, welcome to the studio.
Well, it's great to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I like that with the spokesperson, because the wheels of the tire, you know, the
spokes.
Somebody named that, and I thought that was so fantastic.
Yes, we've just been learning that Brock likes plays on words,
yeah.
And we know all about television, and what were some of the others? Just having a nervous Brock down?
That's right.
And why don't you eat chicken?
Because they go, Brock, 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 Brock.
So now we've established
get rid of all the jokes, and that my mother bought all 140,000 coffees.
Okay, now you've turned your life towards supporting and increasing kindness in the world. Tell us how that came about for you.
Well, I think it started way back in 1970, and I was at university playing football and in a fraternity and drinking a lot and very much out of touch with my heart. And I jumped on my bicycle at that time in 1970 and went 16,000 kilometers all over North America. I don't know if you ever saw Into the Wild, that movie. And it was kind of like my life. I just got on my bicycle and just was on this journey back to my heart.
Why? Why? Why did you do that?
Just, you know, I was very suicidal and depressed, and nobody saw that. And I just thought, well, is that what life's all about, is to go through life like that and just go through the motions of life? And I thought I landed on this planet by some mistake. And when I did this bike trip and the journey back to my heart, out of it came those little reflection books. And I just realized that, you know, that I was taught that something out there was going to make me happy, and I was never happy. And when I went inward And I found that happiness is enjoying the journey of life and enjoying the things, but joy comes from being connected to my heart.
Mm-hmm. And what was it about cycling that helped you to find that?
Well, I think because I was in university in phys ed, and I love sports and everything, and I'm not a person that sits and meditates. And I find when I'm on my bicycle or long distance running, I would get into a meditative state, and all these little thoughts in the reflection books kind of came to me when I was doing that. So I just love being in that state of that feeling.
Mm-hmm. And why do you biking? You're not just biking for fun of it. On the way, you stop at schools, you stop at community centers, and you talk to people who are crowding there to listen to you. What do you talk about?
Well, it's interesting because that first bike trip was 1970, and then 2000, we did another bicycle trip with a support team, and that was 18,000 kilometers right around the outskirts of the United States, 33 states and 7 provinces. And that was an amazing trip. And we had kindness conferences every Sunday. And then this third trip I did last winter, which was a really, really cold winter. Not that this winter was great. I wish I did it this winter. But I was through the mountains of Idaho, Utah, through the snow. And I was speaking at schools. At the end of the day, I'd come in and offer to speak at assemblies. And I spoke at a lot of places. And it was to raise awareness for a kinder world.
And why is that important to you?
I think that's, as the Dalai Lama said, my religion is simple, my religion is kindness. And I just believe that, you know, I think we need to band-aid a lot of the things that are happening. And I think that's really, really important. But I think we need to get to the cause of all our challenges. And so I really believe kindness is that. I think that's who we are. It's not becoming kind. It's that's who we are, that we've lost touch with who we are. And so it's educating people that that we receive from giving rather than, I think we're brought up to get what we can, that there's not much out there, and to get what we can and to hoard it. But when we go to somebody's funeral, nobody ever says, wow, somebody had a great car, they had such a nice house. It's always the kind of person we are. So I think our focus in life is we've lost focus of what's really important.
Mm-hmm. And how are you being received by youth?
I think really, really well. Like, and all people, I think. I just spoke 2 nights ago to out in Burnaby area to parents and from all different schools and their kids. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a really tough one because they're from zero right up to, you know, older grandparents. And I thought this is going to be really scary because usually I do different ages or, you know, parents or teachers or whatever. They, for the whole hour, they are just right there. Because I think when you talk about real feelings, it's for all people. Mm-hmm. And the parents were just amazed that their little ones were just right there for the whole hour. So,
how do you speak to little ones about kindness? How do you help them to recognize that?
Well, with the little ones, I do a lot visually too. So they like that little short video clips about kindness, and I do a little magic and juggling to make it fun. Mm. So you got to keep them kind of going. Now with all the technology, kids and stuff are really into all that, and they need that. So, but I get them to try to slow down and be closer to their heart. So I, with the really little ones, I go around to ask them what kindness means to them. Mm-hmm. You should hear their answers.
Yeah, just love to hear.
They're beautiful. They say respect or caring. Or one little girl said, oh, we're just a little speck on this earth, and, you know, but we need to take care of this earth. You know, we've been given something so beautiful. And their answers, and the parents are just going like, wow. But they, you know, usually we don't listen to them. We try to teach them or tell them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're beautiful.
So do you think kindness is innate in all of us?
I think we came here, this is my own feeling, I never like to try to push it on anybody, so I really make that clear when I speak of things, that I'm just here to share what I feel, and if it touches you, that's great. But I really believe we came here as excited little beings, and through, as we got older, like even up to 5 years old, we started through government or schools or religions or families, we start being taught what we should feel, and we lose touch with listening to what we really feel. You know, I think Leo Bascaglia said it so great in his book, Living, Loving, and Learning. He said the art teacher comes into the classroom, into the art classroom, and says, well, today we're going to draw a tree. So all the kids are all excited, and they bring out all their crayons and all their colors, and they want to draw this magical tree. And he said, you know, they've fallen out of trees, they've climbed in trees, they smell the wind going through the trees. They know what a tree looks like. But the art teacher said, at the first class, draws a tree on the board that looks like a lollipop. And then whoever draws their tree closest to that tree gets an A and a B and so on. And I think that's, you know, where it starts. We try to start thinking, wow, what does the teacher think a tree is, so that we'll get a good mark?
Right.
And I did that with writing, because I never wrote before I started writing my reflection books, because in poetry class, I was always trying to think, what does the poem mean to the teacher or to the poet? It wasn't what it meant to me.
Expressing yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says, what does this mean to you?
Yes. Yeah, interesting.
It really is. Until I was in my last year of university in psychology and phys ed, and the teacher finally said, at that final year, said, write whatever you feel about with life. And I got my best mark ever, finally. And he ended up showing it around to all the different psychology teachers and psychiatrists. And up to then, I got such poor marks.
You touched into something really new.
Yeah, somebody asked me, what do I feel? My parents never did. My parents were great, but we never talked about feelings. We never said, I love you. We never hugged. So finally somebody said, and that's why I think I was suicidal. I was a sensitive young guy, and I needed to talk about what I felt.
And what is your take on bullying and how we are as a society dealing with this issue?
Well, I think, you know, like today's Anti-Bullying Day, which is fantastic, but one of the things we do with our Kindness Foundation is totally focus on the solution, which is kindness, because we don't stop something. And I think the bullying is because, this is my own feeling again, is that we bully because we're not happy with ourselves. So it's getting back to when we're happy with ourselves, we see that we're all one. And so I think if a lot of bullies bully people because they were bullied somewhere, maybe at home or whatever, so they'll bully somebody else. So I believe we're not bad people. We do not so nice things. We're all beautiful in our essence. So I think that's one of the messages I give to the kids is, if you're ever bullied, the reason you're bullied is somebody's not happy with themselves. And they'll often bully somebody that they see's really sensitive and caring qualities in themselves that they've lost touch with. So it's actually a compliment to be bullied, so that the kids go away and say, wow, it's not about me, it's about the other person being unhappy. Same with abuse, what, you know, abuse at home or wherever, it's unhappy people, so that we don't take that personally. Whereas like kids, they don't have that they've lost touch with that awareness at an early age, so they think there's something wrong with them, where it's really the bully that's not happy.
It's still so hard for a child, though, even if they know that.
Yeah.
It doesn't change it, does it? Do you have any suggestions for what children can do to change?
Or parents to help children.
That's what I was going to say. It's the whole thing with schools and parents and everything. We're always in such a rush. It's hard for kids at school because the parents or the teachers are under pressure to get their marks. And we don't have time a lot of times to listen to each other. So to me, it's really coming down first for them to hear that's good. But as you said, Judith, it's really important that we practice things in life. So hopefully the parents, that's what was nice with the parents being there. Because I was saying, one of the thoughts in my books is, I may not like what someone does, but I love that someone who does it. So when you talk to your kids, don't say to your child when they do something unacceptable, you're a bad boy. Because if you hear that over and over, you actually believe you're bad inside. But if you say every time they do something like that, you say, you're a good boy, but what you did is unacceptable or unhealthy. Do you see the difference? So then they're separating their action from their essence. So it's practicing that, eh?
And when you go to schools, I'm just trying to, you know, have this image of your Canadian guy in shorts on a bike with frozen mustache, walking into a high school full of kids, teenagers who divided themselves into gangs and mm-hmm. trying to dominate school or whatever issues that they feel are important to them. And you walk in and start talking to them and try to tell them that the way they live their life is not the best way and there is a better way.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look like? How many tomatoes are flying away or do they?
You know, it's an interesting thing that you say that, because first of all, I don't ever go in, hopefully not, trying to tell anybody anything. And I go in sharing my story of how I went through a lot and was suicidal and everything. My favorite groups to talk to, believe it or not, are the youth at risk or the leaders in the school, one or the other. The hardest ones are the ones kind of in between that are just kind of going through the motions of life. The ones that are in trouble and stuff, they have an energy that's really just misdirected. And so when I go in there, I'm not kidding you, they're the ones I feel I touch the most is the ones that are the youth at risk, because they want to hear real stuff. They're really great kids, but they're in trouble because they don't understand anger. So I talk to them about anger and depression and different things. The anger is a beautiful thing, and what we need to do when we're angry, because we're all angry, I believe, because we've lost touch with who we really are, what I was saying earlier, when we're born. So we're all angry, but we need to scream into pillows or turn towels and get out our anger. But what we do is we take it out in other people and things, and we end up in prison, or we internalize it and we're suicidal and get depressed. So these kids, when they see that, because they're really aware, those kids, because they're the ones that aren't going along with things. So they when you talk to them like that they're really beautiful, but they're just angry, and they have every right to be angry because they've lost who they really, it's amazing. They come up in tears. I'm not kidding you. It's the nicest mm-hmm. feeling. So I don't try to change them or anything. I just, I tell them, gosh, when I come in, if you want to fall asleep or not listen, I don't mind. Just be respectful of people that do, and I'm just going to share my story and be as real as I can. And
share some stories. What happens after you do share your story, and then they come back and they tell you how it affected them?
Well, a lot of times, because I've been on the road, so I don't see a lot of that, after. But so it's more because when I've been on the bicycle, I come in and then leave and everything, so I don't really see them after.
But you get emails, you get phone calls, you some of them get in touch and they tell you what how your story and what you told them affected them. Mm-hmm. So could you share a few of those type of stories or those type of examples, what you've heard from those kids?
Mostly from the kids and stuff?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or other people.
Well, I'll tell you, the nicest letter I ever got, because before I used to think the trophies and things out there were going to make me happy, the marks and stuff, was from a woman in California, and she wrote to me, her favorite grandmother passed on, and her grandmother's last request was to be buried with one of my little reflection books. Mm. So you just think, wow, I'm so glad I started writing. When you get things like that, but I run into people all the time around town and stuff that are just, it's really neat. Just when you see... I'm always amazed, what is that turning point in people's lives? That's one of the things I've always been amazed with. Why was I so close to taking my life, or what makes me excited about life, and mm-hmm. where's that turning point? Like the area we're in right now down here in the downtown east side, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these people, all of a sudden something says to them, oh, God, I'm going to go into recovery. You wonder what mm-hmm. that
moment is.
That moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or, taking our lives, that moment of that I was so close, I was at a point where I wouldn't be here anymore. It's maybe remembering that somebody cared about me at that moment or something, knowing that, having that for a lot of people to say down here, they don't have that basis of caring, maybe in their family or whatever. Whereas others down here come from really caring family. They just got addicted really in, I know so many of the stories down here, and it's every story is so different. Mm-hmm. That's why I do one-of-a-kind stories.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's an event I do every Monday night at the Organic Lives restaurant on 2nd and Quebec, between 2nd and 3rd, just one block west of Maine. And it's somebody's story of how they've been really courageous in overcoming a challenge or facing a challenge. Not even, they're on the journey of overcoming it. And it might have been somebody that lost their legs, or somebody dealing with depression, or somebody dealing with addictions, or whatever it is. And people are just so moved because it's real stories. It's not somebody trying to teach somebody. It's inspiring stories, because mm-hmm. I think that's what is empowering when we hear stories. And then it's a performer that's a really, really top performer here in the either Vancouver or the area, Lower Mainland. And so every Monday night at 7 o'clock, and it's a healthy eating and just a great, great event. If people go to oneofakindstories.com, mm-hmm. they can get all the information.
Yeah, you have so many different projects that you're involved in, and we did create a web page on Conscious Living Radio for this conversation we're having with you. And on that page, we have links to one of a kind stories, to kindness concerts.
The World Kindness Concert, mm-hmm. I do that annually, and Kindness Rocks is a beautiful show we do in schools.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, I have been to a couple of your Mondays events, and it's amazing, because there's no price; it's by donation,
mm-hmm.
and the group that shows up are people who purposely, you know, take the time to open their hearts,
yeah.
and people who come and speak are those who overcame grave sometimes challenges,
mm-hmm.
and now they feel inspired to help others, to, mm-hmm. to share their story and tell others how they overcame those situations. And what's coming up next Monday and then Monday following that?
On this Monday is Denise Hagen, and she's from Ireland, and she is the most amazing singer. She sang in the World Kindness Concert as well. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then a woman named Coral Lee Swigert, and she had a brain tumor, and looked like she wasn't going to make it, and came through all that, and now she's teaching yoga and still on the journey back to on her recovery, but just mm-hmm. an amazing story of courage. And mm-hmm. so that's this coming week.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to play too?
I want my harmonica.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I never played it there. I spare that everybody that. But it's interesting. You know, I do ask like a $5 suggested donation if people can. But, you know, it's interesting in life, eh? And sometimes we, I shouldn't even really say it. Because now, you know, the mixed martial arts, which I appreciate everything being an athlete. That's always my thing. But it's coming to town and it's sold out in a half an hour and tickets are $76 or something to $600. And I just think, well, to go watch people beat each other up.
Yeah, we'll pay big bucks.
Yeah, big bucks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just sad.
So you mentioned being an athlete. Do you think that helps you connect with these kids so that you don't look like a do-goody wimp kind of thing? You know, because
I think it helps. I let them know that I coached college football and college basketball, and mm-hmm. that I'm a combination of a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I think we all are to different mm-hmm. degrees, eh? And I think just with our challenges, whether it's eating disorders or whatever, when we're down, we all go to the refrigerator. But the mm-hmm. sad thing is that we hold stuff inside, and that's when it eats away at us. And mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm trying to get across, is to get it out, that we're only as sick as our secrets, right? That I just feel, because I hear of young people taking their lives or whatever, and it breaks my heart, because I just know that we need to start sharing more.
Yes. And, you know, on the show, we're often talking about that thing of kindness for others, and mm-hmm. it seems that you can't really have kindness for others unless you have kindness for yourself. Do you think that's the root of it?
That's totally, and my brother said that to me years ago, because I was trying to make my parents happy all the time, and I was so unhappy, and he said, Brock, you got to do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
So it sounds selfish, but it's actually unselfish, because when you're happy, you give more to others.
Naturally.
So the thing is to always start with ourselves.
Yes. So do you have, for anybody who's listening, because often people think, oh, you know, you're saying I do what makes me happy, but often people think that's external. How can you help people to get in touch with the internal happiness that's completely independent of the external?
That's right. I mean, you know, I'm an athlete, so I enjoy if the Canucks win. That's fantastic. but you know, a few days later, it doesn't really matter.
Gone.
It's gone,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. So happiness is more like what Eckhart Tolle is talking about, and the power of now, and being in the moment, being present. being happy with who we are and, mm-hmm. and having that passion for life and trying to find our purpose. And it's the journey to it. It's not finding it necessarily. It's that journey there. Mm-hmm. Terry Fox didn't make it across Canada, but he touched everybody. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The thing was that journey.
Yeah, the journey, yeah.
It wasn't, he made it across.
Yes, yeah, very good.
It's neat, eh? It's so exciting to talk about stuff.
It is,
gosh,
I can see you.
So you guys are having me here, I really appreciate
well,
it.
Well, we're very glad that you came. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Judith. And Andrew's always been such a special person. When you talk about giving, Andrew's really a giver, and I appreciate what he's doing in this community.
Well, I'm learning from you.
If we have any listeners left after my jokes, right? We might have lost everybody.
Well, but before you go, I think you answered that question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We usually at the end of conversation ask it.
I thought this was a 4-hour show. Am I muddy here?
It is. We're just coming up to the last 2 minutes of our 4-hour show.
Oh, okay.
And the question I have is, what is the purpose of life for you?
Well, the purpose of life for me really is just, I think, to be present and to feel the gratitude for all we've been given. And I think we're here to do service, to give, and that we receive from giving. So I think that's our purpose. If we'd all do that, we'd have just a magical, beautiful place that we've been given.
Mm. And if there was a magic wand that you could have and made changes in the world or hearts or other people, how would that world look like, designed by Brock?
Well, I just think it'd be very simply that we could walk down the street and smile at each other, say hello, and be able to hug and just give each other that wonderful energy, that loving energy without fear. You know, that I really believe that there's love and fear and that we're living so much in fear. So I think just a world full of love.
Hmm. Well, let's wish that this vision is going to become reality one day.
I'm good. I see it.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to Brock Tully.
Colored gold dangling before me.